Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Kevin Nealon spent 9 years as a cast member of Saturday Night Live. During his time working live from New York, he played such characters as Mr. Subliminal, enjoyed him immensely, the Austrian muscle man Franz, who was ready to pump you up, very Arnold-esque, and Mr. No Depth Perception. Should have stopped doing the subliminal bit after Mr. Subliminal. He's also a very successful stand-up comedian, and he's acted in Adam Sandler movies and on the Showtime series Weeds. But Kevin is also a very talented caricature artist. His new book, I Exaggerate, My Brushes with Fame, is filled with caricatures of celebrities and friends. People like Carrie Fisher, my fellow Canadian Jim Carrey, and my other fellow Canadian, Norm MacDonald. Kevin shares a story for every caricature and why he was inspired to create it. He joins us now to share some of these stories and to let us know when he found the itch to draw.
I became interested in drawing when I was about 8 years old. I saw a sketch that someone had did on a napkin at a cafe, and they left it on the table. It was just a simple face, like a big nose and a hat and a big chin and puffy collagen-type lips. And I was so amused by that, and I kept drawing it myself. You know, I wouldn't trace it, but I was copying it. And for some reason, that stuck in my head. And ever since then, I just started drawing and started drawing, doodling a lot, but never kind of committed to it like I am now. But I think I learned how to draw basically from drawing maps in school, because I didn't trace those. I just had to draw them, hand-eye coordination. And then I used to love Mad Magazine. I saw the caricatures in there by Mort Drucker, and I loved Al Hirschfeld. And I had two caricatures of my parents hanging on the wall in my bedroom, each one separately framed, that a Parisian caricature artist did. And they were amazing. I've never seen anything that great. And every night I'd lay down and I look at those things. I think subconsciously I was studying them and, you know, looking at how he exaggerated everything. So, you know, it's throughout my life I've been drawing these things. And then as I got older, I started drawing a little bit better. And then I was on airplanes going from gig to gig, and I started drawing people that were sleeping on the plane. Some of those are in my book. And then during the table reads at SNL, if I wasn't in a sketch, I would start drawing other cast members in the margin of my script. And then a couple years ago, I was following these artists, these illustrators on Instagram. And I liked this one particular guy's work, and I noticed he was giving lessons. So I signed up for 10 lessons from him, and I Skyped with him in England.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, you have actually posted some of your caricatures, and in the book, all the caricatures are famous people, but you actually posted some on social media and you've never got a response from anybody?
Well, yeah, I've never, I got responses from a lot of people, how much they loved it. That's why I continued to do it. But I never really heard back from anybody I sketched or did a painting of, maybe because they didn't follow me, or until recently I started hearing back from people. You know, Letterman loved his, Brad Paisley loved his, the Farley camp liked his, Dana Carvey. I mean, there's just like one or two that were a little sensitive about it. And there was one that where they said, under no terms can you use this photograph promoting your book. So,
And I suspect you don't want to reveal who those people were.
I mean, that's my biggest nightmare, because I hate confrontation. I hate to make waves. And so when I hear that somebody doesn't like it, my skin is pretty thick from doing stand-up over the years, but still, it took a little chip out of me.
Yeah, I can imagine it would. I have to admit that in some of our show meetings, I occasionally will doodle, and I have a history of doing that for a while, going back probably to even like around your age too, about being 8 years old. But I have never drawn a caricature of a colleague, and your book includes several caricatures of colleagues. Can you walk us through how you go about creating a caricature?
First, I select the character I want to draw, and it could be someone who interests me or someone who has an interesting face or a great reference photo that I found that is the lighting is correct and shows the features well. So that's where I start. Now, I do a lot of these on digital tablet. You know, it's digital artwork, multimedia. I add some paint to it later. And I'm not sure what the actual correct way to do this is, but for me, I start with a very loose sketch of the face. I kind of exaggerate it. The next thing is the eyes. I like to get the eyes first because they're kind of indicative of the rest of the face, because I do think you see the soul in people's eyes. From there, I just try to pick the features that are the most outstanding you know, that are a little exaggerated to begin with, and then I just push that and make them more exaggerated.
Yeah, and you say that there's a downside to doing caricatures.
Yeah, since I've been trained now to look at those outstanding features, wherever I go now, I feel like I'm in a funhouse, you know, mirrors, because everybody that walks by me, I see their exaggerated features and their how I would draw them. And it's, you know, it's a little scary.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be. One of your caricatures is of Johnny Carson, and you have a great story to go along with it. That's something worth pointing out, that you have stories about your meeting encounters with the subjects of your caricatures. Can you share the Johnny Carson Tonight Show story with us?
Oh, my God. I did the Tonight Show, which was my goal as a stand-up comic. That was the bar. If you could do the Tonight Show, it kind of validated you as a stand-up. I remember passing the audition at one of the clubs, and I was so excited. When it came time to actually do it, I was behind the curtain and they introduced me.
Would you welcome Kevin Nealon? Kevin?
And I came out to a rousing round of applause, and Johnny Carson was over my right with Ed McMahon. And as I was walking out to my mark on the shiny black floor, I forgot my act. I could not even think of my act. And I got to my spot and the audience was still applauding and I'm still forgetting. And when the last clap ended, thank God I remembered my starting point.
Thank you very much. You know, I didn't always want to be a comedian. I remember a long time ago I wanted to be a veterinarian. What happened was this baby bird fell out of the tree, you know, and I brought him in the house and I nursed him back to health. And I remember for about a month after that, my nipples were really sore, you know?
It was just such a dream come true for me. And then I got paneled with Johnny, which was a very rare thing for a comic on their first outing. So that was, like I said, that was the highlight of my career to this date, more so than Saturday Night Live or Weeds or any Adam Sandler film or, you know, whatever I've done.
What would you do back in Connecticut?
I just, you know, I've been traveling around a lot, and I just enjoy that now. I wouldn't even think about going back,
yeah,
you know, for longer than 6-7 years, you know. But traveling is fun, but, you know, it gets lonely sometimes.
Sure.
You're on the road, you stay in these hotels, and you don't know anybody or anything. I used to call my girlfriend on weekends, but that didn't work out. And they say calling long distance is the next best thing of being there, right?
And it wasn't a...
I say the next best thing of being there is being with someone that looks similar.
And he threw his head back and he laughed and a little of that smoke still came out of his mouth from the commercial break. And that's what I depicted in the caricature of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great caricature. And that's a great joke, too. Yeah. Well, one of my favorites... I like them all. Like, I can find something to like and love in all of your caricatures, but one of my favorites is your caricature of Tilda Swinton. Why did you decide to do a caricature of her?
Well, like I said, some of my choices come about from looking at reference pictures, and I saw amazing reference picture of her that was done from some Parisian stylist or something, or photographer, and it was such a great photograph of her and makeup and with kind of a look like her neck was a little long. So I did that. And it was one of my favorite caricatures. But then when we went to get approval from the photographs, we couldn't find that photographer, but we knew it was a big time photographer in Paris. So they ultimately said, we can't use that painting. So I had to redo one. And this one, it's funny that you like that because it's my least favorite one.
Oh, really?
The whole book, yeah.
Why is it your least favorite? Is it just
because I was so in love with the original one? It was, I think, my favorite painting out of all the whole thing, because it had such a interesting look and feel to it with the white. She was like so almost pure white against the black contrast. Her neck was super long. It was like like a giraffe almost. And this one just didn't meet the standards that I like. But I mean, I appreciate that people like it. And I think it's not horrible, but it's just not one of my favorite ones.
Yeah. What is one of your favorites? Can you point to one?
Sure.
As being your biggest favorite?
Well, I like the Humphrey Bogart one and the Lauren Bacall, because that's a good story that goes with them. I did a movie with Lauren Bacall later in her life, and she had a very raspy voice because she smoked cigarettes. During the breaks in between scenes, she would tell me stories about Humphrey Bogart because they used to be married. He was a lot older than her. And she told me how they had a big argument one day, and because he wasn't washing the dishes like he said he would or something like that. It was a heated argument, and he left the house and he slammed the door and was gone for like 2 days. And she started to worry about him and worried and worried and worried. And finally, she got a phone call from him. asking if she could pick him up down by Long Beach on the Pacific Coast Highway, which is maybe an hour from their home. So she went down there. She drove down there. She was going down Pacific Coast Highway. And in the distance, she saw him walking toward her on the side of the PCH, holding a single stem rose and just looking tired. And and I could just visualize that. So I drew a picture of Humphrey Bogart and then another picture of him walking down the side of PCH holding a rose with the sun rising behind him. And so that's why I like that story. And another story she told me was that when Humphrey Bogart was sick with cancer, he was very frail. He lost a ton of weight. And their bedroom was upstairs. And whenever guests came over for dinner, he insisted on being stuffed into the dumbwaiter, which in the day was like a little waiter with a pulley that you pulled food up and down. It's not big enough for a person to ride up, but because he had become so small in stature, they would put him in there. And they would lower him down, and he'd come out of the door down in the lobby and meet his guests.
I'm not very tall either. Next time I'll come on stilts, wear a white tie, and carry a tennis racket.
I doubt if even that would help.
You have a great caricature of the late, great Chris Farley. And you two worked together, of course, on Saturday Night Live for 5 years. What do you remember most about working with Chris?
Well, aside from his talent, I noticed how much he wanted to be liked and to get the laughs. You know, he was always trying to be funny. And it was, in a way, it was unfortunate that he couldn't just relax and realize that he was enough on his own. He didn't have to constantly get approval. And also, you know, he was a train wreck, and we all kind of, it wasn't a surprise what happened to him. In fact, he wanted to be just like John Belushi, because he's from Chicago. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he did become just like Belushi. They both died at 33.
Tragic losses, both of those. And Chris Farley was the only person who ever came close to making you break character on SNL.
And that famous Chippendale dancer sketch. You know, where he was auditioning to be a Chippendale dancer against Patrick Swayze.
Barney, we all agreed that your dancing was great. Your presentation was very sexy. I guess in the end, we all thought that Adrian's body was just much, much better than yours.
And I'm telling you, I never broke character in that show, except this one time. I almost did, but I didn't. Every time I looked up from the clipboard to see him dancing, I mean, the belly sloshing around and the stretch marks, I just had to keep looking down at my clipboard. I mean, it was so challenging to get through that sketch.
But you did it, so well done. You're a big Howard Stern fan, so it's no surprise that your caricature of him is so great. It's fantastic. And I think it might be the most compelling caricature of all in the book. And you say that about 8 years ago, you finally faced your fears by letting Howard interview you. How did that go?
It went great. I mean, when I turned 60, I thought, you know what? I'm going to start facing my fears, whatever it is. And I'm start doing the things I've always talked about doing, including caricatures and taking Spanish and learning how to play the piano, a lot of things like that. And another one of my things was facing my fears. And one was going to the Howard Stern show and the Bill Maher show, real time. Well, first of all, because Howard Stern used to make fun of all the actors on Saturday Night Live. And then I listened to his interviews, and he would always kind of put the guest on the spot. And a lot of times people would badmouth other people without meaning to, but because it was just the moment. It's like Norm Macdonald said, he didn't want to do that show anymore because too many people were getting mad at him for badmouthing them unintentionally. So then I noticed that Howard Stern's interviewing technique changed over the years. He seemed to be a little more relaxed and not so... Yeah, he had much more confident and secure in himself, I think. And so, you know, I went on there and I was prepared for any kind of question, but he was very respectful and we had a great interview and, you know, we got laughs and I was floating on cloud nine after that.
There was one question, though, that he did ask you that was kind of like in his old style of interviewing, right? Can you tell us about that and how you responded to it?
If it's the one you're referring to, because it was the only one, you were talking about me dating Jan Hooks on the show, which I did. We had been friends for 6 years before that show, and then we became romantic a year before it, and then we were dating on the show. And he asked me if I had ever gotten into Jan Hooks' pants. And I said, yes, I did. And they were very, very tight on me.
That's great. That's what a great comeback. Have you ever thought about combining your comedic talents with your drawing skills to create your own animated series?
I have thought about that. I've thought about that a lot when I've been seeing all these, you know, animated shows like The Simpsons and Big Mouth, all those shows. And I don't know. It just seems like you need to have a certain kind of a character in mind to do those. And, you know, I'm just doing characters on the face mostly, not even the bodies, except for the Joker. I think there was somebody else in the book. But that would be great. Yeah, I'd like to do that.
Yeah, and well, you should be. Kevin Nealon, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on I Exaggerate My Brushes with Fame.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Kevin Nealon is a comedian, actor, and a caricature artist. He's the author of I Exaggerate My Brushes with Fame. You can find out more about Kevin and his art at wpr.org/beta.
So the control stick where you can move your character around completely in three-dimensional space was really revolutionary at the time when games like Super Mario 64 or Mario Kart 64 came out.
Coming up, Elise Knorr joins us for a shaken, not stirred conversation about the James Bond video game GoldenEye 007. I'm Gordon, Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Radio.